Hey, strangers. For those of you listening at home, this episode is going to be a little different. We recorded today's episode live at the Hawthorne Hotel on Friday, July 27th, as part of the Witch City Tarot Convention. So, as the event's first night entertainment, I did a show in three parts. The first was the totally 100% true, not at all made up history of tarot cards, as told by me, a total expert in tarot and its history. The second was the history of the historic and storied Hawthorne Hotel. And then I interviewed special guest Shari Di Benedetti from the hit TV series Ghost Hunters. Enjoy.
All right. Well, I'm very excited to welcome Daisy Egan.
It's a funny gimmick because you just saw me sitting here 5 seconds ago. It's not like you're like, oh, that's what she looks like. Wow. Thank you, Chris. Hi, everybody. What a beautiful, gorgeous, sexy audience. Oh, I am Daisy Egan, and I am the host and writer and all of the things of Strange and Unexplained. We're in our fifth season. Last year, I did the Stanley Hotel. We weren't at the Stanley Hotel, but we were in Denver, so I just figured close enough. And it was sort of fun to kind of do a location-themed kind of episode, and that went over well. And I thought that for the tarot convention, we would do sort of both, like a tarot-themed situation and a Hawthorne Hotel situation. If you don't know me, what are you doing? Honestly, like, I am an actor and a writer and a podcaster. I've been an actor for most of my life, and I sort of transitioned into this during the pandemic, along with everybody else, and I stuck with it. So that's sort of all you need to know about me. And here we go. Welcome to Strange and Unexplained with me, Daisy Egan, live at the historic Hawthorne Hotel in beautiful Salem, Massachusetts. Let's let the audience know you're all here with a yay! Oh my God. For those of you in the listening audience, there are hundreds of people here. It is packed. Thank you all so much for coming. We're all here for the Witch City Tarot Convention, and you're all avid tarot-ers. So, I know you all probably know all about the history of tarot, but for those of you who just, like, wandered in off the street and have no idea what's going on, welcome. I, too, generally have no idea what's going on. But that is not the case with the history of tarot. I know a lot about that. I have ADHD, I think. I didn't have the attention span to sit through the whole test. Maybe it's ADHD, maybe it's perimenopause, maybe it's late-stage capitalism. Maybe it's Maybelline. Anyway, whatever it is, it means sometimes I get hyper-focused on something like tarot cards and their history, and I start to do research on it, and then my kid comes in to tell me that for the 700th time that morning that they're bored, or I get a text, or a bird lands on my window feeder, or I have to sneeze, or one of the 5 drinks on my desk spills, or I suddenly remember some awful thing someone said to me once in 6th grade, or, wait, I got off track. I'm really sorry. What was I talking about? Oh, right, 6th grade. Honestly, why do they make kids go through that grade? Did anybody have a good time in 6th grade, like, ever? Actually, I did. Because I largely missed it because I was working, but that's another story for another convention. This convention is about tarot. Oh my God, right! That's what I'm talking about. Tarot. I am so sorry. Okay, so I started doing research, which is to say, I Googled tarot cards and was skimming the Wikipedia page when I got distracted by a fart or something, but honestly, I think I got the gist. I am pretty sure I'm now an expert on the history of tarot and its use and practices. Okay, so, as most of you know, tarot cards were invented by a woman named Janet Tarrett, who lived in Sarasota, Florida in the 16th century. Janet Tarrett wasn't a huge fan of people in general, which, you know, same, except for you people, obviously, just this room. So Janet went to live in the woods just to be alone. And she learned how to forage. And she made things like teas and stews and soups and tinctures and unguents, you know, that kind of stuff, from the things that she foraged. Occasionally, she'd have to go into town for, like, butane or whatever, but she was rarely ever seen out in public. And because she was a hermit and made, you know, unguents and stuff and lived in a hut in the woods, a rumor started that she was a witch. This also might have been because of her one milky eye. People thought that because she had one fucked up milky eye, she could see the future or whatever. But the truth was, she injured her eye in a keg stand accident at a frat party in college. And she didn't have health insurance because America. So her eye never healed right. And that's actually how she got into unguents and stuff. And one of the reasons she moved down to the woods is because people would stare at her fucked up eye and children would see her and cry and she just couldn't even anymore. So Janet lived in the woods and made unguents and ate all kinds of mushrooms and just sort of got more and more eccentric as time went on. Now, occasionally, people would wander into her space, your average lumberjack, explorer, band of teenagers out to worship Satan in the woods, but really all they did was drink Mountain Dew and listen to Megadeth and make out. And if that person were particularly brave, they might not run away when Janet came out of her little hut. And if they were really brave, they might not run away when Janet yelled, "Go away," at them. If they didn't go away, Janet would usually just sigh and go back inside and continue making her unguents or whatever. And if the people were really, really brave or had a death wish, I guess, they might even knock on her door. Now listen, everyone gets lonely now and then. Even the most reclusive of recluses needs human contact once in a while. So sometimes Janet would oblige the fearless interloper and let them into her little cottage. And once inside, the person would usually ask her to do a spell for them. Make someone fall in love with them, bring harm to an enemy, give them good luck with Bitcoin, whatever. And remember, Janet wasn't actually a witch. She just lived in a hut in the woods, made unguents and whatnot, and had a fucked up eye. But what the hell? She had time to kill, so sometimes she would humor these people and pretend to cast them a spell or hand them a bottle of something and not say anything about it, and they would assume that it was a potion they needed for their Bitcoin growth or some other kind of growth, whatever. And when they inevitably came back and were like, "What the fuck? Your stupid potion didn't work." She'd be like, "What potion? I gave you a bottle of sarsaparilla." In the meantime, she started drawing portraits of these people based not only on what they looked like, but on their personalities as well. So, like, the guy who was always drunk, his portrait looked like the Jack of Cups. This lady who always came by and ordered her around, she looked like the Secretary of Wands. And the guy who always insisted on paying her for everything with actual money that she didn't have much use for anyway, he was the King of Coins, and so on. And eventually she had a whole deck of these cards representing all the jabronis who came to bother her. And she started selling the decks at farmers markets along with her unguents and non-magical magical potions. And she saved up enough to get out of there. Because honestly, the first thing one should do when getting to Sarasota, Florida is get the fuck out of Sarasota, Florida. So she took herself all the way to Paris, where the avant-garde set considered her très chic and au courant, and she began hanging out with the French artistic elite, like Monet, Victor Hugo, Marcel Marceau, Catherine Deneuve, a pack of Galois, and this baguette. And then, of course, it was the height of the new spiritualist movement, and Janet, who had rebranded herself as Janet Tarot, began introducing her card decks at seances and key parties and whatnot. And pretty soon, anyone who was anyone in the spiritualist movement had a tarot deck, and Janet was charging 10 bucks a pop to tell people's futures with the cards, which at that day, it was like $1 million. And now, here we are centuries later, and you could get a tarot deck pretty much anywhere for any kind of niche thing you're into, whether it's social justice, like the decks you can get from Little Red Tarot, which curates queer and BIPOC tarot artists and states on its website, quote, "Tarot helps us rewrite the vocabulary of power, and with it to strengthen our muscles of radical, revolutionary, and abolitionist dreaming. The deck eschews conventional tarot cards like the Emperor or Knight in favor of non-hierarchical cards, honoring revolutionary concepts and figures such as the Crone, the Healer, and the Rebel, among others. Figures in the decks have bodies of all shapes and sizes, colors, genders, ages, and abilities, together elaborating a vision of collective liberation and co-resistance," end quote. Which is pretty cool. But if you're not into social justice, there are decks for you too, like Britney Spears. Or Cars. Or Cheetos. Or Garbage Pail Kids. Or human Cheetos and Garbage Pail Kids. Or BDSM. Or just dicks. Just in case, you know. The thing I love the most about this card, by the way, is how uneven her boobs are. I'm like, thank you so much. It's gorgeous. I love it. He's definitely a serial killer, but that's fine. Actually, have you ever looked through the original Joy of Sex from like the 70s? No, thank you. The Joy of Sex? More like the Horror of Sex, am I right? Okay. The point is, tarot is more accessible than ever. So that is the 100% true and accurate history of tarot. Please do not Google it. Just trust me, because I am the Hierophant. Thank you. Thus ends section number one. Thank you. Oh, wait, I forgot to do the tarot cards. Oh, my God, you guys. So sorry. I forgot. I promised a tarot reading, especially since I did all that research. Like, I promise these are shuffled. Nobody has time. This is the Black Violet Tarot deck by Heidi Phelps, who sent me this deck because she's a listener of my podcast. So if you haven't listened to my podcast, it comes highly recommended by Heidi Phelps and myself. So I'm just going to pull a three-card thingy. That's what it's called. For the room. What do you think? All right, I'm going to do that. Okay. I don't know the upside downs. All right, I got death. That's not, I'm not. All right, okay. I got the Fool. Okay. And Coven. I got Coven. Okay, so this is the past, right? Boy, we've been dumb. Am I right? My goodness. I don't know how you could explain, like, how we got here, right? Unless we were fucking stupid for a long time. So that's our past, was just dumbness. And death. Death is now. So I'm sorry about that. I feel bad because I sort of feel like you all came here for like a fun time. And I hate to be the bearer of bad news. So we are all gonna die. Pretty soon. Our death is imminent. But then, the good news of that is that we're all going to be a part of a coven. We will be in a dead coven, which will be great, because we'll be dead. And no more taxes. And no more voting. That's fun. And we can make so many unguents. So that is the reading for us. Thank you. Listen, if you don't die imminently, please don't DM me. Dear Yelp, 1 star. She said I was going to die, and I didn't. Have you ever seen a ghost? Have you ever spent the night in a haunted place? What draws spirits to a place and keeps them there forever? Is it something that happened there long ago? Or is it the place itself, its energy? Do places have their own supernatural power? Welcome to Strange and Unexplained with me, Daisy Egan. I am haunted, though not by ghosts. I am haunted by embarrassing shit I said in the 90s or 2000s or honestly just earlier today or by embarrassing auditions I've had or by past romantic partners. Not the partners themselves necessarily, just my own sense of like, what the fuck was I thinking? For most people, though, the word haunting conjures up stories of ghosts and weird happenings and things that go bump in the night. Not one's own poor choices. And as a person who has relocated to southern New England pretty recently, I can now say I am an expert on haunted things and on doing things I regret. I can attest to the oldness and creepiness of a lot of places in this region. There are 2 old cemeteries on my street alone. And while I've never seen a ghost, I have talked on this show before about a presence in the kitchen of my 100-year-old house that puts me in a foul mood every time I'm in there. On second thought, that may be just the fact that I have to not only figure out what to eat for dinner every night, but then I have to fucking make it every night. Like, what are we doing to ourselves? And even if my husband does the cooking, then I have to clean up? Come on. We're made of stardust. New England is spooky. One such spooky place is the little town of Salem, Massachusetts, where the buildings are ancient-looking and the lore of the Salem witch trials is still fresh in every visitor's mind. Salem is home to lots of eerie places, but one that stands out is the historic Hawthorne Hotel. The Hawthorne has had many lives. The big colonial-style building at 18 Washington Square West may seem very old to you and me with its grand staircase, wood paneling, and ornate decor, but before the dawn of the Jazz Age, the Hawthorne had another iteration as the Franklin Building. The Franklin, originally called the Archer Block, was constructed in 1809 to be a multi-use universal building, like an old-timey live-work type thing, I guess. But the Franklin would never make it to the future it was designed for. In 1845, there was a fire that damaged the building enough to warrant reconstruction. In 1859, there was another fire at the Franklin Building. Again, the building was rebuilt. And then in 1860, the Franklin Building caught on fire for a third and final time. This time, it burned to the ground. Back then, buildings burned down in less time than the gap in the Epstein prison footage. Honestly, all it seemed to take was one hot fart and your house was in ashes at your feet. Why so many fires, Franklin? I'm no fire safety inspector. And neither was anyone else at the time at the Franklin Building. The Salem Register described the 1860 fire that destroyed the Franklin Building this way, quote, "An easterly gale was raging, and the fire progressed in spite of all the efforts to save it until the noble structure, which had been one of our institutions for about 60 years and which extended from Essex to Forester Street, was a complete mess of ruins," end quote. So much for the future. It was probably the witches. But human beings in pursuit of progress are not so easily deterred, and it was decided the building would be rebuilt again. Call me superstitious, but if a building burns down three times in the same spot, maybe it's a sign not to build there? By 1921, after Salem began to see an increase in business travelers, Salem residents overwhelmingly decided that Salem needed a beautiful, luxurious, and modern hotel to accommodate the influx of cosmopolitan visitors and to attract even more wealthy newcomers, and the Hawthorne Hotel opened on July 23, 1925. The Hawthorne had 150 rooms and a two-story lobby with a mezzanine and a balcony. The hotel was named for author Nathaniel Hawthorne, whose childhood home was right down the street. For those of you far enough removed from English Lit 101, Nathaniel Hawthorne wrote The Scarlet Letter, which, Jesus Christ, if you have to read it, read the abridged version, because no one needs that many pages on the kinds of flowers growing in the planter boxes in front of people's houses. There really was nothing to do back then. Which explains why Hester Prynne and that dude got freaky, I guess. But never was there a more boring book about two people fucking who weren't supposed to be fucking. Anyway. The Hawthorne then went through a few iterations in the 20th century, including in the 50s when it became the Hawthorne Motor Hotel. I guess the management wanted to appeal to the growing number of people taking road trips across the U.S. in pursuit of the great American family vacation. Ah, remember the good old days of the glamorous Holiday Inns and rustic motor lodges with their branded towels and kidney-shaped pools? Now all of those family-friendly sliding door conveniences have been reduced to seedy, shoddy highway sleepaway stops where people having affairs duck in to add their contribution to the sticky carpet. Instead of destinations in and of themselves. But this was before all that. According to SalemGhosts.com, quote, the hotel managed to stay relevant throughout the decades, even hosting a dance school in its ballroom for several years. However, the hotel's biggest moment in the spotlight came in the 1970s, when a certain witch-themed show decided to shoot a Salem-themed episode, end quote. Yep, they're talking about Bewitched. God, I wanted to be Tabitha. Or maybe I wanted to sleep with Tabitha, but I digress. In the 1980s, the name was changed again to the Hawthorne Inn before it was returned to the Hawthorne Hotel once more in 1989. It now stands today with 93 rooms, an antique house, fireplaces, Wi-Fi, and two restaurants that seem confusingly to both have the same menu. But the food is not the thing that most people think of when they think of the Hawthorne. What most folks will probably tell you about the Hawthorne is that it is rife with paranormal activity. Salem.com says, quote, the Hawthorne Hotel is generally regarded as one of the most haunted hotels in the United States due to countless unexplainable experiences by guests and staff. Of the 1 million guests who have stayed within the hotel walls, it seems quite a few of them have their own stories of strange experiences, especially if they stayed on the third or sixth floors, end quote. When I heard the Hawthorne was haunted, I wanted to know why. You know, I wanted to understand which events in the hotel's history caused it to be such a hotbed of ghostly action. And of course, I had to see for myself. So I stayed on the sixth floor last time I stayed here, and I didn't experience anything too ghostly myself, but I'm starting to think the dead don't like my attitude. Join the club, ghosts. But why the third and sixth floors? Does the paranormal activity have something to do with the fires that riddled the site's histories, or was it something else? Who were the ghosts that walked the halls and appeared in the rooms of the Hawthorne? Who had they been in life? Unfortunately, we could not find much information on the why and who of it all. Apparently, these particular ghosts aren't very forthcoming with information. Suffice to say, whatever the reason, the Hawthorne Hotel is well known to be haunted as all get out. Here are the hauntings that have been documented and have persisted over the hotel's long history. First, we have room 325, which has a creepy haunted baby in it. Because what is creepier than a ghostly devil baby? SalemGhosts.com calls 325 the most haunted room in the hotel. Quote, room 325 is home to a baby or young child spirit who often cries in the middle of the night, jolting the sleeping guest up in a panic. If a cry doesn't wake them up, the feeling of their sheets getting ripped off them will instead. Odd things also happen when the guest is awake. The faucet will mysteriously turn on when no one is near it. Lights will turn on and off on their own. One guest smelled a strong scent of perfume that wouldn't seem to fade away. There is also a common experience of feeling watched while alone in the room, end quote. It's weird to me that people purposely check into 325 just to experience this for themselves. Not to kink shame, but when I go to a hotel, the last thing I want is to be awakened by a baby's cries or by having the damn covers pulled off my sleeping body. I have a 12-year-old. When I go to a hotel, all I want to do is watch HLN and sleep. For those of us who prefer a child-free haunting, the Hawthorne offers room 612 and the sixth floor in general, where one guest reported seeing a woman wearing a long white dress walking down the hallway. The woman who saw this said that the woman in white seemed unwell, so after unlocking her own door, she turned around to check on the woman, but she was gone. This is one of many reports of similar sightings. The woman in the long white dress is often described by guests as seeming disturbed. She lingers in the sixth floor hallway and often returns to room 612. Guests who stay in room 612 have often reported feeling an icy hand touch them or an invisible force grabbing and tugging on their hair. Honestly, this is preferable to the third floor haunting, since the icy hand seems like a more welcome solution to the night sweats. One guest who stayed on the sixth floor left this review on TripAdvisor. I will start by saying that our stay at the Hawthorne was great. We stayed in 610, so there was not any traffic noise. The bed was very comfortable. The room wasn't large, but there was a desk, two chairs, and enough room to lay out the luggage. They only provide one towel per person, but I am sure they would give you more if you asked. The staff was very polite and helpful. The location is ideal, as you can easily get into town and to all of the sites in a few minutes of walking. So far, no ghosts, but wait, there's more. We did experience something odd immediately after turning off the lights around 11 p.m. There was a very loud sound in the room, which made us both sit up straight in bed. We thought someone had opened up the door, but no one was there. The door was closed. And no one was in the hallway. We looked around the room to see if something had fallen, but nothing had. The only way we could recreate the sound was by swinging the metal safety lock open really hard against the door frame, the kind that hotels use now in place of the chain locks. It kind of freaked me out, but I didn't feel threatened. I guess they just wanted to get our attention. And I guess they did. And all of our attention, too. Employees have also reported paranormal activity around the hotel. One worker said that after he had rearranged the furniture in a conference room for an upcoming event, he left the room for a few minutes, and when he returned, all the furniture had been moved back to its original positions. Or so he said. Maybe he just didn't feel like doing all that work and was like, yeah, I did it. But these gosh darn ghosts, they undid it. Oops, rapscallions. It is kind of a convenient way to get around doing your work. There was another employee who refused to work nights at the Hawthorne after another encounter involving moving furniture. This worker said he was cleaning a room and he had to get some supplies. When he returned to the room, he discovered, quote, the room's entire configuration changed around, end quote. Employee ghost rumors aside, though, the most compelling haunting of the Hawthorne Hotel is by far the ghost of Bridget Bishop. Bridget Bishop was the first person to be executed in the Salem witch trials in 1692. She was a midwife, witch, and ran a tavern in Salem town when she was accused of bewitching five young women. Her trial lasted 8 days, and several people, including her own husband, testified against her, accusing her of shape-shifting, astral projection, and all sorts of other witchy offenses, which in actuality were most likely just that she managed to own land and be successful. I mean, if that doesn't scream witch, I don't know what does. Bishop was hanged for her crimes. Rumor has it that Bridget owned an apple orchard that formerly occupied the site where the Hawthorne Hotel was eventually built. This is really the only story of a ghost in the Hawthorne that has some historic connection to the place or some explanation for being there. Amy'sCrypt.com mentions Bridget's ghost. Quote, "It is said that Bridget's ghost will often materialize on the sixth floor of the hotel. In particular, she has been reported to stand in front of room 612 before disappearing into thin air. She is even typically accompanied by the sweet smell of baking apples, despite there being no apples within the hotel," end quote. How do you like damn apples? Note. Cut this. Some believe that the disturbed woman in the long white dress is actually Bridget Bishop. While the spectral activity at the Hawthorne seems to be concentrated on the third and sixth floors, a person won't necessarily avoid ghosts by staying on other floors. One guest staying on the fifth floor reported that they were awoken by a finger poke in the middle of the night. But I do have to wonder if they were alone. We're staying on the fifth floor tonight. Something tells me she's going to get a poke in the middle of the night. Platonically! I didn't even bring my dicks. All right. Okay. Of course, they also said that there was a knocking on their door, and when they answered, no one was there. That actually happened to me too, but it turned out we had forgotten to put the do not disturb sign on the door, and by the time we answered it, the housekeeper who'd been knocking had just moved on to the next room. Literally, we were like, it was a ghost! And she was like, housekeeping? And we're like, aw, man. So far, stranger, with the exception of the nice-smelling perfume and the baked apple ghosts, the ghosts at the Hawthorne sound really annoying. Like, I hope to hell if I am cursed to remain earthbound in the afterlife, I can come up with some better way to express myself and get attention than a ding-dong ditch, you know? What are these, the ghosts of the little rascals? Another guest who stayed on the fifth floor reported that she felt what could be best described as a cat walking across her legs and then settling down by her feet. Of course, there was no cat. And now we're getting somewhere. Finally, something desirable in the hauntings. A cat that snuggles with you and never sheds and doesn't require a cat box? That sounds pretty great. Why isn't that the most requested room? People are gluttons for punishment. The hotel's restaurant, the Tavern, has also had haunting activity. The restaurant has a ship's steering wheel as part of its decor, and the wheel will reportedly turn back and forth when no one is near it, as if someone is trying to steer a ship. Then again, we've all been on the Haunted Mansion ride, and we know that anyone can rig a ship wheel to turn seemingly on its own. It would appear, stranger, that the haunting of the Hawthorne Hotel is well documented, even if it does sound like the hauntings are less severe than, say, being alive right now. Everything's fine. And outside of Bridget Bishop's connection, maybe there is little explanation as to why here, why this hotel. But given Salem's history, it does make a certain kind of sense. A place with so much darkness in its past and so many unjust deaths on its proverbial hands does seem like a place where ghosts and ghouls, specters and spirits, might wander restlessly without any rhyme or reason that makes sense to the living. but it's also a nice hotel. Maybe if I were going to check out of this life with all its unrest and sorrow and widespread pain, well, maybe I too would check into a place like the Hawthorne so I could spend my eternity enjoying a 9.4 guest rating. I've heard worse ideas. Thank you. Oh, it's so raucous. Thank you. That was so fun. Dem apples notwithstanding. And now it is my honor and privilege to welcome to the stage a much bigger celebrity than I am, from Ghost Hunters, Sherry D. Benedetti. Yay! Hi.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you.
We just met in person IRL today at dinner.
Yeah.
Where we saw a very lively demonstration at the table next to us.
Yeah.
From somebody who was clearly explaining, like, what made them start believing in magic. And, like, they got up and they were acting it out. It was almost like
very dramatic
in a restaurant filled with people. It was wild.
No, we stopped just to watch him. We didn't know what was going on, or her. I don't know.
Yeah. So that was fun.
Yeah.
And so I have some questions for you, starting with, who are you? No, I'm kidding. Do you have, like, a first experience that opened you up to what it is that you do? Let's say what you do first.
Paranormal investigating. So, paranormal investigator, I've been investigating for almost 30 years because of a situation.
Oh, we love a situation.
And it's a bed situation, so
Ooh.
You like it. Yeah.
Should have brought my dicks.
I'm trying to figure out where we am.
The bed
okay,
ghost.
So the bed ghost. So I've had many experiences before, but it was always one of those, you know, you would see something, you would hear something, and I would just ignore everything. I didn't know what it was. So then it scared me. So I was always,
sure.
You know, we moved to this house, a specific house. We only rented it. I was living with my parents at the time, and we only rented it.
She's like, I was six. I was still living at home.
Older than that, but yes. It's like mid 20s.
Okay.
Yes. So we lived there for about a year. And so this all started after that. So it wasn't like something was already in the house. So we're kind of thinking, I never went back to investigate. So I really don't have an answer to anything. We're kind of thinking that something like a hitchhiker, you know, somebody attached to me, somebody attached to a family member, or they were just, you know, kind of walking through the street and decided to come in and stick around. Like, I have no idea. We don't know. But I do remember this specific night that this person, and I'm going to say it's a man just because I...
That's okay. We get it. Gender is complicated.
Yeah. In 30 years ago, too. So you could just, you know, you could just, like, you guys know. You feel the energy and everything. And scare the shit out of me. I was downstairs working out and everything. And just all of a sudden, like, everything, like, it didn't appear, but you could feel everything. Scare the shit out of me. So I'm like, oh, so I ran upstairs. And didn't go downstairs for a long time because it's one of those, you open up the door, the lights turn on, you shut the door, the lights turn off. Well, this spirit loved to open and close doors. So I was always afraid.
That's so annoying.
They're going to. I know. So I was afraid they're going to lock me down there or, you know, or something. So I never went back downstairs for a very long time. Probably gained like 15 pounds
because I
didn't. Yeah, I didn't. No, there was no gym for a while. But then all these things started happening. So like the voices and the footsteps and the doors opening and closing and the lights on and just all of that stuff. The alarm would be on, even though she never turned it on, my mother. It would just always go on. We had the alarm company coming over so many times to be like, what the hell's going on? The police would come over because my mother would have to call the police to be like, what the hell? You know, like you hear all of these things.
Wouldn't it be so funny if police could actually do something about ghosts?
We never brought it up to them. We were just like, but there's noises and the alarm's going up. And they would check, you know, like the dew outside. They're like, no, there's no footsteps. There's nothing. Like they went through the whole house. It's like, there's nothing. So it was a pain in the ass. So this one particular night, I just came back from my boyfriend at the time. I just came back from his house. getting ready for bed, and I get into bed. As soon as I get into bed, something grabbed my ankles and held my ankles down.
No, no.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
And so then I, like, pulled myself up to, you know, because I wanted to see
it
what the hell was
to
there.
Do a sit-up, you know, yes, it was. The exercise, he's helping me with the exercise now, yeah.
He's like, listen,
I noticed you haven't been down
the
there.
Basement.
I know. Now it all makes sense.
You're welcome.
Thank you. 30 years later, I figured it out.
I know.
Thank you.
And so, you know, I got up. There was nothing there. And then they grabbed my wrist and then pushed my wrist down. So then, you know, I get down a little bit more. And then I was trying to yell down the hallway to my parents, like, you know, like,
help,
whatever. And nothing would come out of my mouth. And then they put their hand over my mouth and then pushed my head down. I mean, you can feel the fingers and everything. So it wasn't like the pressure. It wasn't the sleep paralysis.
I was going to say, was
have.
It sleep paralysis? Because
yeah.
I've had.
This. Yeah. So a lot of people bring that up and it's just like, no, sleep paralysis. You can't move. You just, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, and I can move. I was like trying to squirm out. I was, you know, I picked my head up. I had my arms up. So yeah, it wasn't that. And I never actually fell asleep. I just got into bed and all of this started happening. But then a doppelganger of my boyfriend at the time appeared at the bottom of the bed. So he was there. So for a split second, I was like, I can't look. So he was there. But so for a split second, I didn't understand because it's like, he's not, is he here? Because I, wait, am I still in his house? Is he here? I just, he's right here. So I didn't understand like how, what was going on. But then I went back to, oh yeah, I'm being tied down. So he walked over. Now he's wearing exactly what he wears. Like he was laying, he had like sweatpants and a sweatshirt. The hair was the same. Now it was only the moonlight coming in, so I couldn't see like his face, but everything else was him. So he walked over and he kind of like leaned over. And I'm only going to say he stared, even though I didn't see his face, because it was almost like looking out to like the sky. You know, like the distance, the stars and everything, like that
like
distant
void,
look,
like
you know?
A,
yeah, it was okay. Just like, so that was that. So, but he was just, you know, like here. So, and I have no idea for how long. No idea. I don't know. And then he kind of got up and then just walked. So when he walked away, like you can hear the footsteps in the carpet. You can hear like, you know, like the thighs. So you hear the thighs. And then he walked over and then the door is over there. So once he got past where I could see the bed, he had nothing from his knees down. There was nothing. So it was just all, this was normal, but that not, as you guys can see. I'm sorry. Like his knees, there was nothing below that.
We're familiar with knees.
Yeah.
Right. They're the things at the bottom of your thighs.
And so then he walked out. So the door opened up and then he glided. Like it was just like a little glide and then the door shut behind him. So in the hallway, it was like a dim light. It wasn't like any of the lights that were on. It was just like a dim light out there. And then once the door shut, like all the lights went out and everything, then everything was raised off of me. And so for about many months.
Wait. Hold on a minute. Did you break up with him?
I married him. But I also divorced him.
Oh,
so,
yeah. That, I,
see,
sorry,
was
but
trying
that's
to
what
tell
I
me,
call
right?
A red flag.
I know. I should have listened. You're
like, you know what? My boyfriend, he flirted with other women. Let me tell you what mine did. He colluded with a ghost. What?
Yeah.
Okay.
I stuck around.
Did you call him and you were like, WTF? How are your legs?
I don't know. I don't know if I called him that night. I really don't remember. Okay. I just remember like that whole thing. But I know for like many months after that, like the TV would have to be blasting because I don't want to hear the carpet or anything. I left all the lights on, even like the closet door open, the lights on over there so nobody could peek in there. You know, so like I had everything on. It took me a long time to get to like now it's like everything needs to be extremely dark. Like I need darkness and, you know, so that took me a while. But while I was doing that, I started doing all the research of what the fuck was that?
Yeah.
Like, is it going to happen again? Can he come back? He held me down. So what else could he do? You know, is anybody else going to get hurt? And, you know, so
I mean, we've all
I did
seen
all of that.
Rosemary's Baby.
I, you know,
did
what?
You have,
I didn't.
Did you give birth to the devil?
No, I
oh my God,
not.
I didn't realize that was a true story.
No, my kids came out really good. Thank God. thank God, to that guy. You know, he's the father of my children, so everything is good.
Okay.
But yeah, we did get a divorce. But then after that, we ended up leaving that house.
Did you ever tell him about this thing?
Oh, yeah. No, he knows.
Okay. And he was like, what? That wasn't
me.
And he
still married me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's going both ways. Yes. Yep. He went through the process of what, you know, I used to stay in my driveway every night, like just because I was always waiting for somebody to come home because I wouldn't go into the house by myself.
Sure.
So, you know, so I'm waiting, you know, and my father was always away. So it was just my mother, poor thing, in the house a lot. And so I asked him one night, I'm like, hey, do you think you could like kind of like stay over and just kind of, you know, because we're just not feeling comfortable, whatever. So we stayed in the living room and he lasted probably until like 2 a.m. And then he's like, I'm out. And it's like, what the hell? Like, so he left us there alone because he was like, I'm done.
That's
he
red flag even... number two.
Yeah, I know.
He left you in a haunted house?
Yeah, he didn't want anything to do with it. He was not liking what was going on.
Okay, but he didn't get held down and have a doppelganger of you come with a void for a face. I didn't know that they could shapeshift.
Oh, doppelgangers, I know. And fact is that you don't even need to be dead to be a doppelganger. Just like residual energy, okay? We all have energy. We're all energy. If you're doing the same thing all the time, your energy might get stuck in that area. So you don't have to be dead.
I'm crying to keep in my bed perpetually.
Yeah. So you might hear yourself cry. You know, you might be like, what the hell? I hear that crying. And it might
be
you
residually.
Right,
because I'd be like, in my mind, I sound like this.
Yeah, see.
But I'm actually like, and I'm like, what the fuck this whole time?
It was you. Yeah. Like, I've seen people, living people, because it's just the same thing that they do. And
so did he have a habit of coming over and just hovering over your face?
That was
because
the only time.
Because that's not normal. Okay.
Yeah. Well, that was a spirit that was a doppelganger. See, I always think of he put himself as my boyfriend so that I wasn't going to get nervous.
Sure, sure.
You know what I'm saying? I don't know what the hell he actually looks like or what. I have no idea. He forgot his legs. Yeah. But, you know, like, but everything else looked
It was
portioned.
Like AI. It was like AI. And you're like, something's missing. I can't quite place it. Penis is way too big. So this happened to you.
Yeah.
And then... You married him.
Yeah.
Then how did you get into, like, professional paranormal investigating?
I wanted all the crap that I went through and then, you know, researching and all that. I wanted to start helping other people that went through the same thing as me. So back in the 90s, we really couldn't talk about all of this stuff. You know, it's kind of like a word of mouth or whatever.
There was no internet until Al Gore invented it.
Yeah, no internet. But you couldn't say that you...
Right.
Ghosts or that you talk to ghosts or, you know, like you couldn't say any of that stuff either. Yeah. And research was a little harder because computer, you know, and all that stuff. But I started, you know, friends and family. So I did some little stuff over with them and then it just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then eventually I had my own team because I wanted, again, like I wanted to help whoever I could, you know, and it's not like nobody has all the answers, but you can start helping people logically think. A lot of people don't have common sense.
What?
Yeah.
That's fake news.
Newsflash. So you can debunk so much stuff. And in the beginning, not now, but in the beginning, everybody's just like, oh, yeah, that does make sense. You know, like the whole draft thing or, you know, you got electrical issue or call a plumber or call a pest control person or, you know, you can have all of these things. I'm not saying it's not haunted, but... These things are an issue because we've figured it out. It's an issue and we didn't catch anything, you know, so we do go through all of their claims. We also investigate every location. And back then you had the cordless phones near the bed and you had the clock, the alarm clocks near all of that crap, electric magnetic fields. Some people are extremely sensitive to it. Headaches, they would see things. It would almost be like something is just like right near you. They think that people are watching you. They have like a lot of the same symptoms as if there's somebody there.
People with migraines sometimes see things like that too, but it's because they're having migraines.
They would get confused of, is it electric magnetic fields? Is it like the frequencies? Again, some people are very sensitive. or is it really migraines? Like, you don't know. A lot of times we do tell people, go to the doctor, see if you have something. But in the meantime, take all this stuff, put it in the other room, just about a week, you know, call me back, see how you're doing. Most of the time they're fine.
Right.
You know, but you always have to, again, you know, where is it? How often do you get it? Does it happen a certain type of time in the day? You know, so you're trying to like track down, what is it? If it's only in your bedroom and it's not around the house, well, it's probably not something intelligent because they can go wherever the hell
that
they want.
What's the thing in my kitchen? Because it doesn't just make me mad. It also, this is, listen, between us, okay?
Only don't between tell anybody. Us.
Sometimes it makes me horny. This is, I'm tired. I talk a good game, you know what I mean? But I'm mostly tired. But sometimes I'll be like, do-do-do, chopping, and then I'll be like, oh, you know what I mean? And sometimes I'll get really sad, and sometimes I'll get really mad. Is that...
You just said horny. Okay.
So
sad, mad, and horny.
Yeah.
All right. I guess it depends on if you're cleaning your something or cleaning your dildos or cleaning... I guess it depends on what you're cleaning.
No,
maybe that's
if
what
I'm
the
difference is. It's usually when I'm making dinner.
Okay.
I did... Anyway. So what is that?
The kitchens are very high in EMF.
Uh-huh.
People that are very sensitive get a lot of things...
Okay.
...their mind. Again, it can be somebody, and I don't want to, you know, discredit anything because, you know... But we would always think the microwave is high, the refrigerator is high. There's a lot of electricity in your kitchen.
I'm high.
You're high. So that could be a problem,
usually.
Too. Yeah. Whatever gummies you're on. I guess it all depends on what gummies you're on.
So weird. I take a gummy, and then 20 minutes later, I'm like, what is that? What is that? One time I turned around with a knife in my hand, and I was like, what do you want? And then she went away for a while.
Yeah.
The electronics that you use, what are those?
Different devices pick up different frequencies. Some actually we can manipulate, and some the spirits with their energy can only manipulate. Usually, again, because a lot of people think that just because a device goes on, it's something, and then they go crazy. And no, you need to make sure that you ask many questions and ask the same questions over and over again. Ask them in different ways. Because you want to see if you're actually talking to somebody. So a lot of these devices do work, and you can kind of have a conversation with them, but you just have to really know how to do it. It's not just a one flash thing. It's
right.
It's not like that. Unfortunately, a lot of the stuff that's going on right now, a lot of the YouTubers and whatever, it's just one flash and like, oh my God, it's a demon. Let's run. That's not the way it is.
Listen, you can shoot anything in night vision and it's spooky, you know? So I get it.
Yeah.
Where do you source your equipment?
There's two locations that they're friends of mine, love them. GhostStop.com and Vortex Equipment. Ghost Vortex, I think it's called. They sell a lot of stuff. I'm sure there's other people out there. It's just those are the two that I go through. A lot of equipment I do not agree with, like Ovulus.
Ovulus?
Ovulus.
That's a terrible name. They focus group that wrong. Ovulus? That sounds like a period tracker.
I know. Oh.
Are you trying to conceive the natural way? Try all new Ovulus. That's terrible.
Yeah.
The one you like is called Menstruous?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so there are a few out there. A lot of people that own them, if their word comes out, it'll be like, you know, hey, who's here? You know, and these words will come out, and all of a sudden it'll be, you know, like, wall, door, Benny. Oh, Benny's here, you know?
Right. Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then it'll be like, oh, Benny, how are you doing? You know, and then it'll be like, you know, like, bus door. Oh, my God, Benny, you got run over by a bus? Oh, my God, are you okay?
Right.
And, you know, and then, like, they would do their whole narrative. And like everybody else in the room would like be like, oh my God, Benny just run over the bus. This must be Benny, you know. So, and then they just don't get the real truth, you know. So there's a lot
Ovulus
of things like that.
What's this like scare? Like not to you, because the holding you down and the ghost boyfriend thing is horrible. But like,
there's another boyfriend story.
Oh, good.
Not the same boyfriend.
They're all horrible. Well, except you. I'm not assuming. I clearly am assuming.
Okay, so I started dating after I got the divorce from the doppelganger.
Yeah.
I started dating this other guy. And he, scientist, he did not believe in any of the stuff he thinks
I'm crazy. Thought you were going to say Scientologist. And no. I was like, all right, that's fine. We can stop there.
So he didn't believe in anything. So he, you know, I have like, you know, like skulls and candles and all of that stuff. So, you know, he comes up, he's like, what the fuck is all this? You know, and then I tell him what I'm in and he's, okay, I'm crazy. But on a serious note, he lost a child.
I don't like this story.
But he, yeah, well, it gets better.
Okay.
But he didn't really believe in all of this stuff. So, you know, like when things, people meet people for certain reasons and, you know, and all of that. And I just really think that I just came into his life to help him get together with his daughter. So to try to help him get through it, it took a long time because I dated him for like 2 years, but it was a long time to get through to him. So I used to live in, I don't know if you know, used to be the Avalon, the Danvers Mental Hospital up on the hill. Well, I used to live there.
I can imagine it.
Yeah. So I lived there for like 3 years.
You lived in the mental hospital for 3 years?
When it was apartments, not okay. When it was okay. The hospital.
Okay. I mean, I lived in one, but just 10 days. Then they said I was better.
Yeah. So his place became very, very active, I'll say. But again, I was kind of like, you know, talking to like the daughter, like, sweetie, I need your help because he doesn't believe me. He doesn't believe anything that I say. Like, I need somebody's help on the other side to help me get him to understand and to believe and everything. Like, shit was all over the place. So I didn't tell him that I asked them, but just, I mean, so much shit was going on in his place.
Anyways, like paranormal stuff.
Paranormal stuff. Not in my place, because I'm surely nothing is in my place. I'm like, don't come over there, but just go over
there.
You've
got the black salt and the sage.
I'm not a medium. I'm not, you know, so I'm not one of those. But in this place, I did, because I'm like, I'm going to try anything and everything, because I don't want anybody in my place. I'm two little kids, you know, I'm like, I don't want anybody. I don't care if you're here. That's fine. I don't care
just
if I see you.
Don't mess with me.
Yeah, don't mess with the kids.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it only happened like one time with my daughter. And then my son, but they grew up with it.
Okay.
So yeah, I taught them whatever. So they're not afraid or anything. Anyways, so he moved out of there, went to another location, this other location. So I went over there to visit and I turned on the TV. So, you know, I don't know, we're talking. He's like, all right, I'm going to go and have a cigarette. So he opened up these, was going to open up the sliding glass door. So I looked back just because we were talking. Something grabbed him. You know, like when you pick up a child, like they're facing you and you pick up. It was almost like somebody picked him up like this and threw him like this. So
off the balcony?
No.
Where the balcony come
I don't know. He's sliding last door.
Oh,
so
yeah,
it's
no,
like
he didn't even go outside yet.
Okay.
He didn't go outside. So he was still like, he was just about to grab the sliding glass door to open it, but they grabbed him.
Threw the sliding glass door?
Something was near the sliding glass door. Like, I don't know, but they... Yeah, okay. So they
picked him up and tossed him.
And so he went backwards and he like went up in the air and then he landed and then he slid and then he hit his head on the stairs. So that's all as far as he can go. It's probably maybe like 12 feet or something like that. And so, yeah.
You saw this happen?
Yeah.
Hold on a second. Did he trip and fall?
No. Okay. He got high and then like any selfie. But... Again, I didn't feel nervous because it wasn't towards me. Uh-huh. You know what I'm saying? If something's happening to somebody else, you're kind of like,
who cares?
Oh. Yeah. 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 It'll be an accident. Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah. But again, in my head, I'm like, because I'm asking them, hey, you need to help me. He's not listening to me. He's not paying attention.
Also,
you guys need to help
me. And also at the hospital, with this cracked skull open, you can't be like, it was a ghost.
Yeah.
I swear to God.
This wasn't even at the hospital. This was at the next location.
But he didn't have to go to the hospital for his
head? No. Oh, no. He was just scared. He was just scared to death. At that point, he was starting like, holy shit.
Yeah,
like
sure.
Because you had to do something so bad and so physical and like...
To get his attention.
Yeah, to understand like, holy shit, you are... There is something to this because how the hell did that even happen?
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so no, we broke up. So we're not together anymore.
Wait, did his daughter pick him up?
After that, he was, oh my God, I can feel her. Yes, I can feel her. So that whole thing was kind of like, okay, now I understand. Now I can feel her. You know, thank you so much. I understand, yada, yada, yada. you know, so it was kind of like that was our relationship together. And it's like, okay, now it's time to move on. It sucks that we had to go through that, but it was the only way for him to
That's
feel it, you know?
Crazy.
Yeah.
Like, I thought you were going to be like, somebody went, boo! You know? They picked
well, boom,
him.
Boom, but not boo.
They picked yeah. him up and threw yeah. him. That's not cool.
Yeah. yeah.
That's very scary. That's scary. Yeah.
But again, like, the scariness wasn't, like, towards me. I felt like I was kind of in back of them, being like, do it, do it, do it.
You so know? You're, like, not, so was, you're not an empath, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
No, no. The movie that's based on the true story about that family with the kids, what the hell is it called? I covered it on my show, and then they made a movie of it, and the kids were getting haunted, but the mother was being accused of child abuse. And then they were at the hospital, and the kid climbed up the wall. And a child social worker watched it happen. Person from CPS, the social worker was like, I don't know what to tell you, but the child climbed up the wall.
Mm. I've never seen that before.
But you think that could happen. It could have been a
doppelganger. I only believe things that I've experienced.
Sure, sure,
so,
sure.
You know, there are things that people call crawlers, which are things that just like kind of like crawl around. I've never seen one. When we're videoing and picking up stuff, you do see, you know, like black shadows up there and stuff like that. But I've never actually seen like a figure, okay. I guess, yeah. I would say. Yeah.
If you see my mom, can you just be like, Daisy has some questions? You got some explaining to do? This is so fascinating. And I want to ask you 7,500 million more questions, but we don't have time. This was amazing, right? Thank you, Chris, for suggesting Sherry, because I wouldn't have been able to fill this time on my own. And this made my job a lot easier. I'm so fascinated by all of this. Anyway, it's past my bedtime, but I'm totally going to come on your investigation because I can't.
Oh,
now
nice.
I can't pass this up. I thought I was going to go watch HLN and go to sleep, but and poke my friend.
You can still do that because we do this in the dark. Bring the bath.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining. Yeah. Thank you all so much for coming. Please listen to my show, you know, on the radio thing. And enjoy the rest of the conference. And thank you so much, Chris.
Yeah, no.
Next time on Strange and Unexplained. In 1811, the comet that would become known as the Great Comet streaked through the sky and seemed to bring with it devastating earthquakes, floods, and bloodshed. It also inspired a musical. Was the comet a portent of disaster or a message from the universe, as some believed? Or was everything that followed it just a series of random coincidences? Strange and Unexplained is a production of Three Goose Entertainment with help from Grab Bag Collab. This episode was written by me, Daisy Egan. I had research and writing help on the Hawthorne section from Joe Gradette and Eve Kerrigan. Sound design and engineering by Jeff Devine. Music by Epidemic and Blue Dot Sessions. If you have an idea for an episode, head to our website, strangeandunexplainedpod.com, and fill out the contact form. I will write back. For more amazing content, join us at patreon.com/grabbagcollab, where for just $5 a month, you get all the Grab Bag exclusive shows, and for $8, you get those, plus Amber Hunt's Crimes of the Centuries and Strange and Unexplained early and ad-free. Grab Bag is an all-female and non-binary-owned profit-share network where our contributors get to keep ownership of their shows. We strive to give a platform to those who might not be able to land themselves on a bigger network. Who knows? Maybe you have a podcast idea you'd like to pitch to Grab Bag. We've got live recordings, watch parties, book clubs, and more. Why there's so much going on over at Grab Bag, you'll wonder if we missed the memo on how capitalism works. Join me on Instagram at SNUPod, Daisy Egan, and Grab Bag Collab, or head to the Facebook page to join in the conversation. If you like the show, please visit a sponsor with our unique code, give us a quick review and 5 stars, subscribe and download, and tell a friend. Stay strange.